All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucking ears? What the fuckadelics? What's happening? How's it going? It's Mark Maron. It's me. Who'd you call? You called me. It's Mark. You called me. No, you called me. What's happening? Are you in quarantine? This is a special show for those people who have been quarantined. I hope you have enough water, enough canned foods, enough fresh foods. It's going to be okay. I don't know how it works, the quarantine. Is it self-quarantine? I know some people are on lockdown, but I hope this is an entertaining show for you. You know what you could do while you're under quarantine is my new Netflix special, End Times Fun, is now streaming. And people are fucking loving it. They're loving it. I went out of my way to do some other podcasts. Not too many podcasts, but I did Bert Kreischer's podcast. And I did Brian Cowan and Brendan Schaub's podcast. You know, I wanted to get the word out to the bros that they should come, you know, that maybe we can bridge a gap. I don't know that my mother loves it, but she took a little hit. She took a little hit. You know, what are you going to do? It happens. It's tough being the mother or the lover or the friend of a comic. Sometimes you're going to take a little hit. But a lot of people and a lot of things took hits in this special. And I don't want to say it was prescient, but it is relative to what we're going through. And I do hope you're holding up. I hope you're okay. Those of you who are handling the virus, I hope you're all right. I mean, I don't know anybody with it. I've read about what it's like or what it could be like. And I guess the real issue is the numbers. Most people are going to live through it. But the people that don't, that number gets bigger the more people that get it. And when it's this big of a spread and this quick of a spread, the pandemic model, you know, if it does go as bad as it could go, even if it's 2-3% mortality rate, if the number of people that have it is 50 million, that's a big number. And we want to try to avoid that. Obviously, we want to try to avoid it altogether, but it does seem that many people will get this in one form or the other. I hope you're taking care of yourself. I hope you're doing the best you can. And I hope you enjoy my special, because it is the time to do that. These are the end times. And my special is called End Times Fun. It's very specific. It is entertainment for the times that we are living in. Though the prophecy or the speculation in the special was a Burning Sky, not a bad Bad Company album. Actually, a pretty fucking good Bad Company album. I think that might be their last one. It might be the last Bad Company album, if I'm not mistaken. The sky is burning. I believe my soul's on fire. There you go. But so not the virus, but the burning sky. But nonetheless, the sentiment is there. So enjoy the special. I made it for you to enjoy. What else can I tell you about what's happening? I went to last night. What a fucking night, man. I'll tell you, we did the Bon Scott tribute at the Avalon here over in Hollywood. And it's like a few comics. It was me and Dean and Burr doing about 15 to 20 each. And then Dean, we do AC/DC music. The last one we did was a couple years ago. We did the entire Powerage album. And this one, Dean put together from a live set of you know, Bon Scott era AC/DC. And it was amazing. Look, you know, I get nervous with this stuff, but there were a lot of Dino fans, a lot of AC/DC fans, a few of my fans, maybe our collective fans, but they were definitely there to rock. And the band was amazing. And the people that played were amazing. But this guy, Phil Olivieri, whose company, Solo Dallas, he makes pedals, but he also brought all the Marshalls. He brought all the equipment that AC/DC plays through, and he makes these pedals that make you sound more like AC/DC. Certain type of boost. I don't understand that shit, but he plugged me into one. He gave me one last year, but he's great. You know, he was very excited. He loves AC/DC. So the lineup, the basic band lineup, was Steve Gorman on drums from the Black Crowes, and it was Josh Z on guitar, and Billy Rowe on the other guitar, and Mike Inez on bass. Mike Inez from, I guess he played with Alice in Chains, Ozzy, and Josh has played with a lot of people. He used to play with Dean, had a band called Mother Trucker. It was just so solid, folks. It was so solid. They did four tunes, just that lineup, the backbone of the band. And it was almost like, why are we even going to go out there? They were in such a fucking groove. And man, like the musicians that played on some of this stuff, it was crazy. It was crazy. Dave Lombardo, the drummer, played. Lair Lalonde, I think is how you pronounce his name, from Primus. And Mr. Bungle, I think, played. But Dave Lombardo, holy fuck, what a monster drummer. Steve Gorman's a monster drummer. And then fucking Brad Wilk from Rage Against the Machine, who goes out with Juliette Lewis, who also sang. She came and sang Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap. He drummed. Scott Holiday from the Rival Sons played some guitar. I mean, it was fucking nuts. It was fucking nuts. I played on The Jack and on High Voltage, and we all played on Night Prowler at the end. Oh, fucking Bill Burr. Billy Burr played drums. Bill Burr played drums on The Jack. I played with Bill. There's a little bit of footage out there. I put some on my Instagram of a solo I did. And I get so nervous, and I'm practicing, and I'm doing my scales, running my fingers, and I get nervous playing with people because it's not so much I can't play. It's just that I'm not used to playing with people, staying in a pocket, you know, not getting ahead of the drum or off or what, you know, just, you know, laying back a little. And I was nervous, but I think I landed a couple, and it was really, can I say it? Can I say it in this time of plague? Can I say it in these end times? I had a fucking blast, man. I had a blast. What a fucking riot, man. Just a jam. Makes me want to jam more, but I don't know. I don't know if I could last a whole night of just me jamming with people. Did I mention Don Gavin is on the show? Don Gavin is on the show. Don Gavin is an old school Boston comic. He's got this, his live album, Live with a Manhattan, has been re-released. It never got the proper release when it was recorded in 2011, but you can now get it on more than 100 streaming platforms, so go check that out. Don was like one of the dudes when I was coming up in Boston. He was like dug in. He was a legend. He was a defining force of Boston comedy at that time in the 80s, and It was intense to talk to him because I remember, you know, kind of being a toddler, a comedy toddler, you know, sitting at, listening to Don. So I definitely need to call my mother. Yeah. Got to do that. So I went to physical therapy. I'm now entering the physical therapy part of my life. Turns out, and I fucking knew this, my posture is garbage. I don't think that has anything to do with, how I hurt myself, but my posture is garbage. And, you know, to be honest with you, I will tell you why it's garbage, speaking of my mother. I'll tell you why, and I know it because I still do it. If you ever watch me sit on a show, or even on my special to a certain degree, I need to be splayed out. I'm low in the chair. I'm hunched over. And do you really want to know why I walk with a hunch? It's because I was sucking my stomach in. When I have good posture, I feel like my stomach is sticking out. And that's a no-no in the Marin household. You don't want any tummy showing. So I fucked my posture up to sort of stay tight. Hide my stomach, hide my shame. I have the posture of a body-shamed person I'm just hunched over, like guarding myself. Don't look at that. Don't look at my body. Don't look at my stomach. That's where it comes from. That's the habit. And the physical therapist said, you know, because you've got your head so forward, you know, these muscles in your neck and shoulders are basically, you know, carrying around a bowling ball, and which I thought was a little rude. I do not think, for one, my head weighs as much as a bowling ball, though I don't know. But it was not flattering. But I get the idea. It's about weight. So all these muscles that aren't used to carrying the weight in that way are doing it. And so when you need them to sort of buttress whatever damage I did to my spine, they're not really even situated properly. I had no idea. So I'm going to start doing that, and I'm going to start walking properly. Mark my words, people. My posture will be impeccable. I'll probably have to get new shirts, new suits. Everything I own has been fitted for a slouching, slumping person, for a hunched man who can't even sit properly because he's uncomfortable. This is it, man. This is my time. It's my time to change my posture. Do you hear me? Mark my words. It is. Don Gavin, as I said, is a Boston comedian that was there. He was like one of the big dogs when I was coming up in the late 80s. I opened for him and a couple times here and there. Johnny Yee's, I remember, playing that dumb dollar poker game with him, drinking. Hey, that guy can drink, man. Still does it. And but really one of the funniest guys working. His own trip, man. His own style. Had a lot of influence on people you don't even know. You know, and a lot of influence on some people you do know. But yeah, man, he has an incredible pace and timing. And he's just like the real deal. And I was thrilled that he wanted to come on, that he asked to come on, and that I could have this here for him. So this is me talking to Don Gavin. He's here promoting the re-release of his album Live with a Manhattan, which never got a proper release a while back in 2011. And now you can get it on more than 100 streaming platforms. So go check that out. This is me talking to the master, Don Gavin. I worked a weekend with you and Johnny Yee's.
Right. That was the only one. That was the only Cape Cod club that we actually made money, I think.
Yeah. But it was, remember, there was the Polynesian show.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they'd move the.
Yeah.
They had a stage that would move back into the bandstand.
And we stayed in the hotel was like 4 inches away.
Right? Yeah, right there. Yeah, right. And then there was that big fat guy, Wayne. Yeah. Was that his name? Or remember the guy who ran the Polynesian show and then kind of ran the place, a heavyset guy with long hair?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember staying at that hotel. For some reason, I feel like it was me, you, and Joe Iannetti.
Okay.
And we just stayed up all night and played the poker with the dollar bills.
Liar's poker.
And I was terrible at it, but I was excited to have been there.
That place went on for a number of years.
It did?
Yeah.
But I mean, like, where do you live now?
I just moved to Florida.
Oh, I thought you were like, for some reason, I thought you were in Portland, Oregon.
No, I've always been in Boston, not sure, Nahant for 25 years.
Really?
I mean, when I said just moved, I mean, a week and a half ago. So,
what part of Florida?
Boynton Beach, which is near West Palm.
Is that like, is that for work reasons or retirement reasons?
Not retirement. I didn't save any money, so there's no retirement. Not in the fucking picture.
No stopping.
No. And I don't want to retire anyway. I'm working more than I'm always working.
So. Yeah.
So, and I like it. And I was more for the weather. The fucking weather finally got to me.
Oh, really? It's done? It's time?
It's in my bones. I'm still cold from being in Boston 3 weeks ago.
You're still cold now?
Yeah. It gets in me. And so where I live now, that's what I want. And also I do a lot of cruise ships, and most of the cruise ships go out of there.
So that makes it practical.
Sure.
Now, like the cruise ships, like that's a big business. Like, and I've only talked to like one other person Who does ships, really.
We'll talk about that if you want a little bit.
I talked to Vanessa Hollingshead.
I know the name.
Yeah, I mean, she like does somehow has a whole career on boats.
I do about 20 a week. 20 a year, excuse me.
20
weeks,
a year.
20 weeks.
Yeah. So 20 weeks.
Yeah.
So that's like the bulk of the business.
Yeah, yeah.
And now with the boats, like, how does it work? I mean, like, I don't think I'm the right guy for a boat.
Right. Most people are not.
But they do. But now, it used to be the fear was, like, back in the day, the idea was the boat, you had to be clean.
Right.
But now they have both, right?
Well, they have, depending on what your situation, I'm usually in a headline room where I just do my show. You
know? Right.
But then you can have the one where you do the welcome aboard, mm-hmm. clean, mm-hmm. and then you have a late night show, which you can say pretty, you know, you can't,
sure.
you can't cunt.
Right, right.
That, but no, but you can say fuck and whatever.
No cunt, huh?
Yeah, no cunt. So that's why I don't work that room. No, no.
But so what's the welcome aboard? What's that?
That's hello and goodbye. Oh, you might say the farewell show, which is much better. Farewell show makes sense. People have been on there for 8-10 days, and you can shit on the boat and say this sucked or this was great.
Right.
But when they first get there, they don't even know how to find their cabin. They know where the fuck they
right.
are.
So, that's so you're the first night?
You're the first thing that they sing. The cruise director, you know, they have a couple of girl dances for 2 minutes, and here's our comedian. And I swear there's people just wandering around, you know. I have people, when I was doing this, you do like a half an hour. 28 minutes in, the people are walking in to go sit in the first row. I said, the fucking show's over, you dickhead.
I can't imagine that.
And you're there for, the fear is for people that don't know the thing, you know, that if you suck.
Yeah.
You're stuck with the same people on the boat, but I don't suck, and I know how to hide. So, so they can't find me.
How many shows do you do, though, like in a
week?
Well,
you had the question about, you know, the language thing. Now they have, because the ships are so big. I just got up this one called the Intimacy, largest mm-hmm. ship in the world. 6,100 passengers.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is.
So you can, like, you can do a week?
No, they have a comedy room.
Yeah.
A 250-seat comedy room.
Yeah.
Which is like a throwback to Vegas days. You do like 17 shows a week or 15 shows a week.
Really?
Two or three every night, which is not my cup of tea.
Are they half-hour shows or full-hour?
Yeah, exactly. No, even 25 minutes.
Oh, okay.
And that's where they always say, you only have to do 25 minutes. Yeah, but I have to do 15 of the fucking things, you know? I haven't got one night off, and I like my cocktails, and now I'm going, so that means I can't drink. Well, you're killing me here, you know? Yeah.
You got to wait to have the cocktails.
Yes, and I don't want to wait.
It's like you one show, then cocktails.
Yeah, right. It's funny. Rogan says something about, you know, I still drink, and everybody in Boston's AA, you know, and,
right.
And he said, did you ever try to stop drinking? And I said, no, I didn't. That was my answer. I actually thought for a minute, no.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, I'm sober, and I talked to Sweeney. He's sober. I remember what you fucking drink. What? You like white Russians, I
black
think.
Russian,
black Russians, right? Yeah, the black Russians. No milk.
Yeah,
exactly. I remember.
Yeah, that's funny.
I remember.
Because it was always one in my hand, probably. That's all.
No, but like, we would sit there at Nick's.
Yeah.
And we were having fun, you know, at that bar in the back of the original Nick's in the circle. And I think you were, didn't you, I maybe dated a waitress or married a waitress?
Pam.
Pam, yeah, she was great.
She said to say hello, by the way.
Oh, that's very nice. You're still with her?
Kind of here and there.
Yeah, okay, you know? good. And she's all right?
Yeah, she's great. She's great. But,
and I just remember, well, we won't go too deep into it.
No.
But it's sort of amazing that you still drink, isn't it?
I don't find it amazing, but I do find there's a lot more. I find that there's a lot more booze around because nobody else drinks. You know?
But do you don't find that it doesn't tie
have
your...
we started yet?
Sure.
Oh, I didn't know.
But I mean, do you like? Doesn't it beat you up a little bit, or no? You're all right.
I'm no kid, but I walk every day, and I'm actually in pretty good shape, so I'm still surviving.
You're just one of those guys, man. You're genetically built for
hopefully,
it.
Hopefully, yeah.
What do you mean, hopefully?
Yeah.
I mean,
like, I wake up in the morning, I never have a hangover in there, no.
When do you start drinking, though?
Oh, you know, in the evening. I have a few, like, the name of the my album that's out is called Live with the Manhattan.
From Manhattan. Yeah, got it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And that's a virtual comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is that kind of shows a picture of Manhattan. And that's before then, a few of those.
It's so funny, though.
And then eat, and then afterwards, maybe a couple of those Black Russians that we mentioned.
Yeah, the Black Russians. But that's it, just the booze?
You had to stop some of the stuff, please. No, you just said, you wouldn't be interviewing me. It would be at Forest Lawn as we went by on the way up here.
Right?
Yeah.
crazy.
No, you couldn't. No, the other stuff, no.
You can't do that. You age out of that.
The white stuff, no. That had to end at some point. Somebody asked me, when did I stop doing this? I don't remember, but I know it was a long time ago.
Right. So, yeah. You just...
Why'd we quit that?
Coke.
You know, the Coke. Yeah. And we said, well, because the product is kind of crappy now. You can't get anything any good. And
right.
That was the initial reason. And then money wasn't being another one.
Sure.
And then health, of course.
So, right.
Yeah.
And also, you run out of things to talk about. How many times can you stay up all night talking to your drug dealer?
You're repeating yourself, and then you're repeating yourself.
Yeah, right. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in West Roxbury.
West Roxbury.
Next to Brookline.
I remember West Roxbury, and it's, isn't it next to, well, it's next to Brookline. There used to be a...
Next to Dedham, Brookline.
Right, there used to be a deli there that I worked at on Pottingham Circle called Gordon's Deli.
Really?
Do you remember it?
I remember. I know Pottingham Circle.
Sure. There was a Chinese restaurant, and then there was one of the last of the Jewish delis there for a while.
I know the place you don't, but the Chinese restaurant, because Red Auerbach used to go in there all the time, the guy that was the president of the Celtics.
Oh, the Celtics president.
And he just pretty much lived at that place.
At that place.
And where you're talking about was up towards where the tennis courts and all that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I just remember working there one summer. I worked at a deli there.
And it didn't last? You couldn't make a career out of that?
Out of working, being a deli guy?
Yeah.
Well, it was one of the last Jewish delis in Boston. There wasn't that many. There's like B&D or whatever. And I found this one somehow by this guy named Shelley owned it with his wife. And he's this huge fat guy. And he would sit there eating the ribs from next door. Or, you know, it was crazy. It was a whole world of...
Could you fall back on that if you had to?
It's the last job I had done. Like, you know, like when I really think about what could I do, I'm like, my resume is a little shallow. I was a grill cook, and that was it.
Wow.
But you had a gig, though, before.
I was a teacher.
But like West Roxbury, though, when you were growing up, that's like, what'd your folks do? What was the family like? I mean,
It was blue collar.
Yeah?
Everybody was white Irish Catholic. Everybody.
And were your folks from Ireland? Or
my four grandparents are from Ireland.
Oh, yeah?
All four.
See?
Yeah. And in fact, my son-in-law is from Ireland also now, too. So the Irish, but everybody, I mean, when I say everybody was Irish, everybody was Irish. You know?
Right.
Like an Italian family was, that would be an oddity.
Yeah.
And no blacks, no Hispanics, just.
All Irish in West Roxbury.
All big, big families.
Because the Jews came there eventually, didn't they? Or were they in Brookline?
Well, they're in Brookline. They've always been in Brookline.
Yeah. And was that, now you had grandparents that came like off the boat. They were Irish.
Yeah.
Now, what do you know where you come from in Ireland? What part?
Cork.
Oh, yeah.
County Cork. So all four from the same area.
And do you have like a ton of brothers and sisters?
I have a small family, just three brothers.
Yeah.
That was the point. That would be a small family. But it was always great if you wanted sports because all you have to do is knock on three doors and you'd have 15 kids, you know.
Right. They were just right down the street.
Yeah.
And so you brought up pretty Catholic?
Brought up that way, yeah.
Went away.
Everybody says they're fallen Catholic. I don't know what they fell out of, but I don't know. It kind of changed quite a bit. But I was pretty strict Catholic. I went to Catholic grammar school.
Yeah.
And then I got a scholarship to a Catholic high school. So,
yeah.
So I had my 12 years worth. I got my beatings in.
Did you really get beaten?
Oh, yeah.
And the nuns were really
No,
like
the
that?
Nuns weren't bad. The Christian brothers.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know if they could eliminate the word Christian. I don't remember that being part of their modus operandi.
And so...
They used to carry... They had that cincture around their pants and stuff.
Yeah.
And there would be a strap. They had a strap. Big leather... Thick leather thing that they carried, like cops carry a gun. They carried it. It was right outside.
Yeah.
And I was hit. One guy, one particular brother Ford, passed away. Thank God. He he used to give me the strap every day. Every day.
What, for what?
He was the trigonometry teacher. And I still remember one time I got 100 of the thing, and I got it. And he was so used to hitting me, he gave me the strap that day too. I said I got 100. He goes, well. You probably deserved it. You know, you had it coming.
That's for tomorrow.
It's for stuff that I didn't see.
Yeah.
Wow.
And your brothers were older or younger?
Two older brothers, one younger brother.
Are they around?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, still around.
Guys,
yeah.
You guys are tough.
Yeah.
You must be
resilient,
tough.
I think.
Yeah, resilient, that's right.
Yeah.
And so, like, do you go, have you been to Ireland?
I've only been there just in, you know, it's a pity that I haven't done more.
It's beautiful.
Because I've been to 150 countries.
It's weird, and you're avoiding Ireland, huh?
I don't know if I'm avoiding it, but yeah. I was in Shannon Airport. That was about it. So.
That was it?
Yeah. I don't know why I've never made that trip.
There's probably Gavin's back there.
Oh, there's still relatives, yeah. Because yeah.
I just went there, and I have no connection to it genetically. I'm an Eastern European Jew, and I love Ireland. Yeah. I love it.
All right, I'm going to take your suggestion.
You should.
I'll do that. Between the USO and all the cruise ships, you know, yeah. I've been pretty much everywhere.
A lot of places.
Everywhere, but I have not been to Ireland.
Yeah. You'd be surprised, man. You know, it was like I had this weird observation about Ireland just from being, because like, you know, when I was coming up with you in comedy and you know, I'm about as different from a guy who grows up in Boston as you can be, really.
Sure.
So I was always kind of like, you know, I was always trying to fit in. And there's a certain
time. Were you really trying?
Not really.
No.
I was doing what I could.
In your own way.
Yeah, I was trying to, you know, get something done, right. Become something. But the Boston Irish are tough as fuck.
Right.
I mean, right? I mean, yeah. that's their reputation, yeah. Right? So you go to Ireland and you see dudes that look like Boston Irish, but they're Irish, and you're expecting this attitude and this ass kicking, and they're just sweet as can be.
You're expecting the aggression in your face.
Nah. And it's not there. I'm like, well, I don't know if I can get used to this.
Yeah.
But it's the same families, same thing.
Wow, that's interesting.
It is. It was really weird because my immediate feeling is like, oh, here we go. Yeah. And nothing. Just, hi, how are you? You know, just nice people.
Yeah, they're putting me on here.
Exactly. Yeah. So when you're growing up, though, do you went to school, you went to college to become a teacher?
Yes. Yeah.
That was the goal?
That was the goal, I should say, yeah. And I taught for 14 years. Then I was a coach. I coached a couple of sports, which I really loved.
What did you teach, though? Like, what years?
I taught from 1970 to 84.
Right? Really?
Yeah. I was teaching while I was doing comedy the last three or four years.
But when you set out to be a teacher, like, what subjects were you teaching? Like
I was teaching primarily English, but then I got into guidance.
And, oh, really? Yeah. Like what grade?
Me in guidance.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was a younger you.
Well, I would hope so.
You hadn't got off the rails yet, I guess, I'm assuming.
I don't know. Maybe. I guess you're right. I guess you're right. Looking back.
Well, you were hiding it good. Yeah.
No, it wasn't a constant.
You were out all night.
The devil came out a little later.
Later, right?
Yes.
Comedy brings the devil out for sure. Yeah. But so you're teaching English to like high school?
Well, I was teaching at a vocational school
where
English was their second language, but they didn't have a first language, you know, because it was just, you know, I mean, I used to make the kids auto bottles, sheet metal people. I make them wash their hands before I give them the books.
Oh, right.
You know,
right.
It was just not. So I should have been teaching more advanced kids, and I was teaching them, and they paused. We didn't get along. They didn't. When I coached, the kids loved me.
Yeah.
Teaching. No, they didn't want to be in an academic setting, you know. They didn't mind being in shop 1 week, but the next week they had to go to classes.
Oh, so this was like a requirement. If you want to build the engine,
and in those
you got to learn how to write things.
Well, supposedly, yeah. Yeah, well, at least to read the instructions. You know?
But in those days, the
vocational schools were pretty much a dumping ground for the guys that couldn't, girls too, that couldn't make it in regular mainstream. So every class would have, you know, four kids would be out because they were in juvie hall or they're...
There or jail or the military.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know,
yeah, I remember people saying, well, you know, if he flunks your course, he's going to have to go in the service. And going, best thing in the world.
Send him.
I don't even care if he goes in on our side. He could play for the other team. That'd be really good for him.
Yeah, because he's in trouble.
Yeah.
So
you're right, with that... Maybe jail. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Right.
Maybe both.
Right. Yeah. So it was just sort of like, we got to get him a trade. At least we got to try.
And that has changed so dramatically now, because now, like culinary schools, you know, there's waiting lists for all these types of things. But in those days, if drafting would be different. That was a little bit. Carpentry was okay. But I can still remember these auto body and auto repair and sheet metal guys.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Monsters?
Why do we need this English for?
Maybe
I'd want to speak to
poor. Write something down. Yeah. Maybe.
I remember trying to teach literature to them, and the word, to this day I remember it, irony.
Yeah,
and
irony.
I said, just give me the definition back, you know, satire and a couple of different words. Irony. And the kid, and I gave him 100 on the thing, he said, the complete flattening out of a town, irony. And I go, well... You know what? You get 100, that raises you. You're averaged up to around 30. So, yeah, but the complete flattening out of a town. And he was dead serious. I said, "Was this? That's a pretty good joke." He goes, What do you mean, Joker? I know it's a flattening out of something. I said, yeah. Ironing.
Yeah, the complete flattening out of a town. Yeah. And he was confident.
Oh, yeah. He knew he had that one right.
So when you're teaching and you're doing like the guidance thing, are you doing guidance for these?
Guidance was basically showing them how to turn the doorknob to get out of my room. I actually had a sign on my door. My door is never open.
This is for the same vocational school?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But seriously, I'm trying to show them how to do business letters.
Yeah.
And I said to the kid, he signs his name. I said, well, I have a name, Gleason. It's Gleason. He goes, yeah. He said, well, you signed a Gleason. He goes, well, I was in a hurry. I said, you misspelled your own name.
Come on.
No, I'm not making this. I'm going, this is the type of people I deal with. I said, I was in a hurry. I mean, he actually had an excuse. Like, you know, yeah, I was in a rush. That's your name.
And this was this in West Roxbury?
No, this Weymouth. Down on the South Shore.
Yeah? How'd you met? Why down there?
Oh, because they looked at me and I was big enough, and they hired people according to size rather than strength.
You look like you might scare them.
Yes.
They might listen to you.
Yes. Yeah. All the academic teachers were like me, 6'2", 210.
Oh, really?
Like
just so they wouldn't push you over?
Yeah, like the guy in the next, one of my best friends played professional football for 7 years.
Yeah.
You know? And so that was the type, yeah. That's who they hired.
And what'd you coach?
And then my buddy, he was teaching math. No, he was horrible at math. I went in one time, he gets up on the blackboard. I said, yeah. I said, you know, that's wrong, what you have on the board there. He goes, well, they don't know. I said, and you didn't know.
Did he admit it?
Yes, yeah. It wasn't a problem.
They just hired me because I'm big.
Yeah. Yeah. And we used to, detention in high school.
Yeah.
Now, when you were in high school, did you have problems?
I ditched school a lot, but I never got into big trouble. Yeah, I would skip classes. And one time I got sent to the principal's office because I set something on fire.
Oh, well, depending on what it was.
It was an electronics class. I was just fucking around with shit. And it was an accident, but I got suspended for a couple of days. Why? What were you going to talk
about?
No,
I was just saying that I wouldn't send with the other guy, the football player, Kenny Blauser, my friend. We'd never send anybody to detention. What we'd do, we'd make them play us in basketball and basically beat the shit out of them, you know. Five of them against two of us.
Yeah.
And we'd start the game by, okay, you guys take it out and you throw the ball and hit the guy right in the balls to stop the thing. And,
that's what you
and
did.
Physically, I mean, elbow, beat them up, you know, to the point that they were, you think, no, don't, you know, send
so
us,
they got the idea.
Send us to detention.
We will never do it again.
Yeah.
So what... Now, what businesses are your siblings in? What do they do?
They were in the trades. My dad was a carpenter. My one brother worked for the phone company, and two other brothers were master electricians.
Oh, really?
And I'm the idiot that talks. And I can't do anything with my hands. Well, I do a few things with my hands, but not anything that's socially acceptable.
Yeah. So they were electricians their whole life?
Yeah.
That's a good gimmick. That's a good racket.
Yeah,
there.
They were.
It's a skill, real trade.
Yeah.
You need them. People need them.
Yes. Well, I was thinking that, you know, when the end of the world comes or whatever,
soon.
Somebody can do something.
Yeah.
Like telling jokes is really not going to be a...
I know.
It's not going to be on demand.
No. We're going to be the first to
can
go.
Can you build a shelter? Yeah, okay. You're the good. Top of the heap now.
Hey, listen to this, though. I got a good tight five. Yeah. We don't need you. Yeah. You're outside the gate.
Also, I play the ukulele too. Good.
Oh, come on in. That's good. We need a uke player.
Yeah.
But
you know how to build a fire with those matches? Okay, you're the president.
Yeah, I wish I knew how to do something.
Yeah. You know, it's never too late, people tell me. I said, well, it's pretty damn late.
Yeah, it's getting there. I mean, I guess I could. I mean, you could build something, couldn't you?
Oh, no.
Nothing.
No. No, I mean, like some assembly required. But that's a bullshit line. There's a lot of assembly.
Sure, yeah, it's too much. Like, get someone to do it.
If the handyman special. I go, yes, they are.
Yeah.
I'm not one of them. You know? I just bought a condo, and it was ready to move into. You know, and I looked at the other condo. He said, oh, all you have to do is, you know, maybe knock this wall out. And I said, you got the wrong guy.
No. It needs all the walls need to be good where they
Everything
are.
Everything has to be in shape.
All set. Or,
you know.
Oh, that's nice. So were you living in a house up in Boston?
I got it. Yeah, I was in an apartment, and eventually, the weather, honestly, the weather finally got to me.
Yeah, and it's not getting any better. Right. So what makes you make the jump from guidance counselor, where, you know...
Oh, into the comedy? Well, yeah. I was a bartender for a lot of those years, and I was a wise guy bartender, you know, kind of...
Where were you doing that, tending bar?
Probably 20 different places.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And that was...
You could always fall back on that, right?
I could. Yeah, which I may fall back as of next week if things keep going the way they have. No, but that was like, for instance, before, I had 22 seats at this bar, and if I remember this one, four guys sat down, one guy said, "What's your cheapest beer?"
I said,
"Root beer, screw. Get up.
Screw."
And I said, "If you put $20 tip to me before you order, then you can sit down." And they go, "What do you mean? We haven't ordered yet." I said, "That's the point. Give me $20 and everything's going to be good." So that I carried into whatever comedy I was doing.
Yeah.
And for a while, it seemed to work.
Yeah. So you would literally entertain guys at the bar in a way.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. And then, but
also having all those, you know, it's Irish families, and my dad was a great storyteller.
Was he?
And as most old time Irish guys, you know, and so that fell to me.
Well, some of them can talk. But like, you know, and they seem like they should be telling a good story, but they're just charismatic, and you know, you realize like that didn't go anywhere. Right? I mean, but some guys genuinely can do it.
Yes.
And your dad was one of those guys.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. But it's funny because like I guess your jokes are more kind of like, you know, quick.
Yes.
You're not doing the long form stories.
No, you're right. Well, they come.
But they all string together, yes. Don't they? Yeah.
There's
yeah,
the sides.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
there's
yeah,
tags.
Yeah.
And
so you took it all from your dad?
A lot of it would be, not the material, but but the pace that I talk at, a friend described it one time as 70 words a minute, gust to 140.
right.
And I used to talk so fast. I played some old tapes from the days, like when you were in town.
Yeah.
And I hear the audiences laughing. I'm going, I have no idea what I'm saying. I don't even know what I'm saying.
Well, that was the Coke, too.
Possibly. but everybody else in the audience was on the same stuff. So
sure, was, yeah. Everybody was jacked.
Yeah. I mean, those bad habits, when you think back, like smoking. When I was growing up, everybody smoked.
Did you smoke?
Up until the year 2000, a bunch of us quit on the same day. And I've never had an urge after like a month and never even thought about going back. Everybody, when I say everybody smoked.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, everything. On airplanes. Yeah. We smoked on airplanes.
I can remember when some of the cruise ships, the four German couples I stuck with at the table didn't speak a word of English.
Yeah.
And they're having their ice cream, they're smoking while they're having ice cream, you know, puff of the thing and a little bit of vanilla.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'm going, oh, my God.
Yeah. Still at it. Yeah.
And I think the same thing with what we were playing around with, from, you know, the Coke and the drinking. Everybody else was doing it.
Sure.
Would be doing it, too. You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was, I remember it was just, you know, it certain places, and I don't know, like, it was just around, man.
It was almost like acceptable.
Yeah, it kind of was, yeah. So when you start doing comedy, where's the first place you go up?
Well, there was only one show in town, that was the Comedy Connection.
The original one down?
Yeah, the one on Warrington Street.
Down the street from Nick's.
Yes, yeah. As you remember, there were three comedy clubs, four or five comedy clubs, all within, quarter mile there.
I guess that's true. I mean, there was Nick's and then the Comedy Connection and then what?
And Duck Soup across the street.
Oh, that was later.
It was later.
Yeah.
And then Daugherty had the vault.
Daugherty. Oh, yeah. You're insecure. That's your problem. That's what he said to me.
He's still around. he's still around.
Yeah. Oh, he's another resilient fucker, huh?
Yeah. He's one of the few guys that's left that's, quite a bit older than me.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's still.
He's old timey.
I think he's still performing. I don't know.
He came out of the happy hour circuit. He was like a singer.
He was a singer. It was Dick Doherty and the Majority.
You remember them?
And he was the highest paid. He was the highest paid act down the Cape, and he owned this place, the Crystal Palace.
Oh, really?
Which would be worth a fortune now, just the land alone.
Huh?
And I mean, he was like a honcho down there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was.
And he fucked it all up on drugs.
Yeah.
Right. And then he gets. Oh, he must be sober a million years.
Went through
now.
Different wives and this and that.
Yeah.
And well, as a lot of people, you know, what you made, you spent.
Yeah.
There was never anything about, gee, maybe I should save money for next week.
No, never. I said, like, when I started, like, I still have a mentality like that. Like, if I have a little bit of money, I freak out and I don't buy anything. Because, like, I feel, you know what I mean? Like, I don't.
You mean insecurity? Or
No, I'm afraid I'm going to not have money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, I just hold on to, like, I just.
So I know who to go. If I need a loan, I know who to go
to. That's
now.
Right.
Okay,
if you have to. Yeah. If you, I mean, not let's not go crazy, but.
Yeah. We're talking, you know, maybe 10, 20 grand.
But you know how to have a good time? Do you have a boat?
I have friends that have boats. That's much better.
Oh.
Then you don't have to do anywhere. End of
so,
the war.
Okay. So you go up at what year is it that you first go on stage? In the 70s?
79.
Really?
It had been going on for a couple of years before I came in the first wave, but I was
79.
I caught the last.
So the connection was really the first comedy club
there. Yes, yeah, that was the only one.
And it was
like people talk about, oh, Jay Leno. Well, Jay Leno wasn't working in comedy clubs in Boston. There was no such thing. There was before your time. It was a Playboy Club,
right? Or they'd open for musical acts, right?
Yeah, that would be the place, maybe a venue for
the Playboy
for
Club.
A club. Yeah, for
do you remember that place?
It was before my time.
Huh.
But I mean, I know where it was growing up, and you know.
Yeah.
But I was too young.
So in 79, so the Comedy Connection's been open a couple of years?
Yeah. And then we opened up the Ding Ho over in Cambridge.
In Cambridge at the Chinese restaurant.
Now, but you never worked there, right?
I was there, like when I got to college in 81 or 82, I went over there.
Oh, you did?
I did. I was actually able to go on stage there a couple of times on the open mics.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think it was towards the end of it. I wasn't there during the heyday.
Right.
But I remember, Lenny was hosting an open mic when I was there. Right. Maybe is that?
And I
possible?
Had a show there, Steve Sweeney.
You had
a show
there, Sweeney. Yeah,
DJ Hazard, remember DJ?
DJ Hanard.
Hanard then.
From the old days. Yeah, I remember DJ, of course. Like, because when I was in college, in 81, 82 ish, I would go to Played Against Amps because I wanted to do comedy. So I started doing open mics on my own. I think it was probably the summer of 84 at Played Against Amps.
Oh, okay. And that was Barry Katz's.
Katz, but like, you know, Rogerson hosted it.
Sure.
So like, I remember both with Kenny and Lenny.
Yeah.
Lenny at the Ding Ho and Rogerson at Sam's. Like, you get on this list to do open mics. You wait all fucking night.
Right.
They'd get shit-faced. Yeah. They do an hour between acts.
Right.
And they forget to put you on.
Yeah, they go, this next guy. And you see you're waiting patiently.
Yeah.
And repeat, this next guy.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, 45 minutes later, that's it, folks.
I'm over here. That's the fucking worst.
Yeah.
I got so mad.
That wasn't just unique to there. That happened to me going down to New York. When I would work a catch or something like that, you go all the way to New York. And you're waiting around right now it's 1:45.
Yeah.
And guys like Andy Kaufman would empty the room intentionally.
Yeah.
I'm going like, what an asshole,
right.
And then I never got on, you wouldn't get on.
Or you get on for four people.
Yeah.
And they're like waiting for you to get off. So
and then at that point you're so distraught and you're so pissed off, you're not going to be funny at all anyways.
Yeah, you just feel your whole sort of like reason for being there diminishing. It's the worst feeling. You had to go through that too?
It's a slow bleeding.
You know? Yeah, it is. Because you sit there, you're there at the beginning of the night, and it's great.
Yeah.
And then you just slowly watch.
Yeah.
You're like people going away.
And there were guys, if you remember, like that, guys like Gottfried.
Gilbert.
They would intentionally walk the, they used to go walk in the room.
Right.
Making people leave. I never got the point of that.
I don't think that was that was not a Boston thing.
Not down in Boston.
No. If anyone was walking in the room, it was because they lost their minds. Like if Jay Charbonneau got mad, maybe some people would leave. You know what I mean? Like the only reason people walked to Boston was because the guy on stage got pissed off that no one was laughing. Right?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, correct. Yeah. Yeah. And that's why going to all the way to New York, which to me was a big deal.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, man. That frustration that, and like you said, you get there early.
Yeah.
You'd be there from 8 to 1:30.
And you're told you're going to go on.
Yeah. You should be, any minute.
Yeah,
now.
Lewis.
You should be there.
Done. We can get you up in a little while.
Yeah.
From Boston, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you were here a couple weeks ago. Yeah.
Right,
I didn't get on then either.
But see, that's the interesting thing because, the one thing about working in Boston. Was you worked. Like, once I got that, I came in second in that festival, I was out on the road, those two-man shows, one-nighters.
Sure.
You know, you that's how you paid your dues, around waiting.
Right, a lot of satellite rooms. Sure, you could work pretty much.
Yeah.
And I look back, keeping notes away. And the money was, shit. But I look back, in one year, I worked 330 days out of the 365. So you'd work every
night. Just in the area?
Yes.
On those fucking
without traveling. I didn't travel for years.
Yeah.
I had my own show at Nick's on Saturday night. For 9 years.
Wow.
And I missed about six weeks total in 9 years. And we started with one show there, and then eventually by the end, we were doing five shows on a Saturday night.
I remember the fucking, remember when they, I remember this with you. I remember you were there that, like, yeah. There was a period there where Nick's had like three rooms within the
upstairs,
one place.
Downstairs, and downstairs.
Right. And you would do like two right. shows in each room, five or six, and you
run
it up
run
and down.
From one room to the next.
And they were all packed.
Yes.
It was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember that, man. Yeah. And we're all running up and down.
Yeah. And I was saying, and I was, at, when we did it the first time, in those days, the Boston idea was that the headliner would be the host of the show.
Right.
So I'd go on in the, you know, bring you on.
Yeah.
Mark, man, okay, you do a great joke.
Yeah.
So you do your 15.
Yeah.
And the next guy comes up and he shits, and so I get him off in six, because I want to control the whole thing.
Right.
But when you're doing five shows, you can't be in two places. Like, I remember Dominic, the manager, on the side, he said, you're on upstairs. I go, I'm on here right now. I'm on stage. You know.
Oh, Dominic, is he around still?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he's all right?
He's straightened out.
Did he?
Well.
Yeah. Is he? Oh, that's good.
Yeah, he's on the bright. He's been for many years.
Oh, good.
He's a sheet metal, sheet rock guy, you know, working hard guy.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, he's doing very good.
Oh,
yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's nice. He was always a pretty nice guy.
Yeah, yeah, when sober, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you talk to Chappie?
On occasion, yeah. but he's out this way. You know, he's doing the Hollywood thing.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't seen him lately. I used to see him around.
But a lot of those guys, Lenny and Sween and George McDonald, I still talk to.
George,
and,
yeah, he's
he used good. To host one of those open mic things too.
Yeah, he used to host it at Comedy Hell at Stitches.
At Stitches, exactly.
Yeah, I used to do that. Yeah, yeah. And Crimmins has passed away now.
Yeah, it's too bad. Yeah,
I know. Like, so, all right. So you go to the Comedy Connection. It's 1979. So who are the guys that are
well,
around?
The people were already around then. Teddy Bergeron was one
fucking
of the guys.
So funny, dude.
And when he was sober, he was brilliant.
When he wasn't sober,
he was horrible.
I had him on a live one. No. It was very, like, you know, in Boston. I think I reached out to a bunch of people, but there's a rift there, right, between Blumenreich and some of the older guys.
Oh, more than a rift.
Yeah. Right. And you're on the anti-Blumenreich.
Oh, there. Way on the, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I'm on the top of the wall shooting.
Because I don't know what happened there, but like,
one thing, he just almost pretty much refused to use the axe in Boston. He goes, Don Gavin, Tony V. He goes, yeah, they're okay. They're not my cup of tea. He goes, I don't know what the big deal is, so I'm not using people like that.
And this is in town.
In print. You know, and I'm working everywhere, and I'm going, hey, what an asshole.
Yeah.
And so this day, then he tried to get me in his place, the Wilbur, and he called, and he offered me, like, hardly next to nothing for a show on a Saturday. And he said, well, I got to get the first $1,500 that comes in.
Yeah.
And then you can get three other guys and split up, you know, and I'm going.
Right.
I said, oh, I'm deeply interested. Because I didn't think you'd be interested. Great. So, you know, I'm bullshitting them.
Yeah.
So I hang up.
Yeah.
I get a phone call from a couple of real jerky comedians called, oh, if you're in, I'm in. I'm going, I was fucking with them. I wouldn't put my foot in there, you know? If my brother could be in there performing, I'd have to get
still not
paid.
Go in.
No.
Yeah. I don't, like, I just came in, I know I did a live WTF, a live podcast.
Sure. Yeah.
And I knew,
well,
like,
that's right. When you went in, you asked me to come on.
Yes.
And that's the reason it is because of that.
And I get it. And it's just a connection.
Yeah. And then when we started doing, the Ding Ho in Cambridge.
That was Lenny and Barry?
And me, and Steve Sweeney.
Yeah.
And DJ Hazard was a guy.
DJ was one of the original guys, too.
Oh, yeah.
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 Driving around that Subaru Brat. You remember that little pickup, that Subaru he had? So funny. He's such a big boy in that fucking little pickup.
He was another big kid. If you remember, in those days, almost all the comedians were big, too.
Big boys.
Had, that was kind of like the teacher thing. You know, just hire people that can handle them. You can handle the crowd with your wit or with your fist.
Right. Yeah. And there were no women yet.
None. Paula Poundstone was one of the first.
Yes.
Did she show
up at the Ding Ho?
Yes, she worked at the Ding Ho, sure.
She's a character.
Yeah, yeah. She worked at the Ding Ho quite a bit, yeah. And Stephen Wright came out of there, too, a couple years after that time, too.
Right. And when did Kenny Rogerson get there?
He came in a few years after me. He was a Chicago guy. And when he first came in, he comes into the Ding Ho.
Yeah.
It's a snowstorm. It's got to be 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
He comes in. People are... First of all, it's after hours.
Yeah.
The place probably 50 people in there, almost all comedians.
Yeah.
But we have a table up on the stage, people playing cards for pretty good money.
Yeah.
People over here are smoking joints, people are drinking, people are doing blowing. He goes, oh my God, I found the home.
Yeah, I used to hear about those stories about after hours at the Ding Ho.
And the hours, I said recently, that if you leave there and it wasn't light out.
Yeah.
And I go, oh, great. You know, like, I can maybe get 3 hours sleep, maybe.
Right.
But you come out, you go, oh, shit, it's 8:45.
People jogging by.
That was the worst. Boy, you were up early, aren't you? I go, yeah, the worst. I got up early 28 hours ago.
And Elmini too, right?
Yeah, Kevin was one of the first. He's another guy. He's another guy that emigrated. I got him in.
Where did he come from?
I did the San Francisco competition.
Oh, yeah.
And he didn't make it. You know, they go down to 40 people. Well, he didn't even make it to the 40, which I was surprised
at. Yeah,
I made it to the final five or whatever. But so we became fast friends. And I told him, I said, come out to Boston. You know, you can get a lot of work. And
he lived in San Francisco?
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah.
Because I thought he, and then he went back.
Well, he originally was a Connecticut guy? So
maybe.
I think so.
I don't know. He passed away too, right?
Yes. Yeah. So, but I brought him out. I said, come on out. And he caught on right away. So like you said, even if your craft wasn't perfected, you could get stage time to work at it, was not true of L.A. or of New York.
Because they had to fill those one-nighters. I mean, sure. I don't know whose genius that was, but you know, between Mike and the connection and Katz, you know, there was like 200 fucking...
Dick already had a million of them.
Oh, he had a few too, huh?
And then
Roger Paul down in Jersey, right? Yeah. So there was just like this weird network.
You could work every night.
Yeah. Remember like the Taunton Regency? That was like a good one.
And one of the keys to working is to have a car. You know,
there's
usually the guy that had the car.
Yeah, I was the guy. That was part of it.
But that was usually not one of the best comedians.
That's right.
But he had a car.
That's right. So yeah, that as an opener, you'd have to drive guys.
Pick up three or four people.
Yeah.
Not pick them up at one central spot. You have to go and get this guy here.
Go get Cybele and fucking...
Bob Cybele. Yeah. No, that was another one of the original guys, too. Yeah. He passed away, too.
That's too bad. Yeah. He was a sweet guy.
See, it's good you're interviewing me now because before I passed away.
Oh, I'm
afterwards,
glad.
It wouldn't
I'm
be that
glad
much
glad I got... No, it wouldn't be that much fun. But Cybele was a kook. He was fun. He was a nice guy.
He was unique. You know, he was well-educated. He was a teacher also, which I didn't know until many years later.
Yeah. No kidding.
But he was a guy that had stories and character. I mean, he hiked the trail that goes
Appalachian off. Trail?
Yeah. Not once, but twice.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Healthy guy.
I don't know about that, but he stopped doing everything. He said, you should have known me when I was drinking. I go, no, I'm glad I didn't.
He was wild.
Because you're already crazy now.
Yeah.
Imagine with him on acid. He said, I was really into the acid.
Oh, so he was like that guy.
I said, like you did it more than once? He goes, more than once.
And Tony V, you're close with it. He came in after you?
Tony came in after us, yeah.
Because he's like Bobcat's generation. There was that whole
bunch. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Bobcat, Tom Kenny, Tony V.
Good memory.
Yeah, and Groff. Like when I was doing open mics.
Jonathan Groff.
Dana Gould was just leaving town.
Yep.
Bobby was just leaving town. When I was in college going to my first shows, Goldthwait left. He had a garage sale at Stitches, right,
as a
show.
Really?
Yeah.
That's funny.
And like Dana left and Tom Kenny left. And I guess Paula left a little before that.
Right.
And they all went to like San Francisco, like it was Mecca or something.
Yeah.
Kevin Meaney too.
Yeah. He went back to San Francisco.
And then when I was coming up in Boston, the guys in my generation were like Kevin Knox was like around my age. And I'd gone to L.A. for a year and then came back, got all fucked up on drugs with Kennison, who you hung out with when he first came.
Yeah. Kennison, yeah. I was out with that crew, Calabo and that crew for a while too, which was not good for my health.
No. You went on the road with them?
A little bit, yeah.
Oh, yeah, with the Outlaws, when Lenny was with him?
No, Lenny wasn't with him then.
Oh.
But we did a number of shows,
That's a rough, that's a rough go.
That was in a real, real bad period there.
For him?
For Kennison, yeah.
He was doing
stuff on stage and, you know, the blow.
So that was after the peak. Coming down the other side.
He said Papa, but you would never know if he was going to show up.
He was supposed to be cutting
a new album, and,
right.
And Calabo and I ended up three different nights doing the whole show because he never showed up.
Yeah, I had that problem.
And now the audience is there. They didn't mind seeing me and Cal, but they were waiting to see Kennison.
Sam, yeah.
And they wanted, that was always, and then we'd have to do a show after that, and it's the same people, and they didn't want to hear it.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I remember like when I was living up on top of the Comedy Store, Crest Hill, you know, Sam had been up for two or three days. We'd all been up. He passed out on the floor, and that night he was supposed to be like at where my brother went to college in Tucson, I think Arizona State.
Wow.
And I had to call my brother. I'm like, I don't think it's going to happen.
He might be a little late.
Yeah, I don't know if they're gonna pull it together, and you know, and only my brother knew that you know he canceled because he was all fucked up. But you know, that was the thing about hanging out with Kennison. There was a lot of listening involved, and that gets a little bit much,
uh-huh.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Sam. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll take a little more. Just slide it over.
Yeah.
So when did you do the San Francisco competition?
I did it 80. Maybe 81 or something like that. I had only been doing comedy a very short time. So, I was still teaching, so I took a sabbatical half year.
In 81?
To see if I was, to complete my master's. And unknown to the people that where I was teaching, I only needed one more course to get my master's. They didn't know. So
right.
I went across country to see if I was a comedian.
Right.
And I went with Martin Olson, do you remember him, the piano player at the Ding Ho?
Oh, he was? No, I don't remember
him.
Yeah.
We had a piano player, which I always thought that was a luxury, you know.
Sure, the comedy store still has one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. Well, almost all the clubs did. Think about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And to me, it seems like a foreign thing right now.
It was nice. It was a human.
Oh, no, I like it. I like it.
I hate when people play music to bring you up to. Like, they're like, you know, about to bring you up, and they're like, I'm like, come on.
Yeah, what do you want for your intro?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, what kind of music? I want to know.
Just bring me up. Yeah, it's like, what do I got to?
Yeah. So I took him. We drove cross country.
Yeah.
With Martin Olson. I drove. I had car that I had a car at the time.
So you've been at it 3 years, but you're doing well. You're killing, right?
Yeah, not even 3 years, because even less. But I'm doing okay.
You just took to it.
But I want to know if I'm a comedian. I'm not sure that I'm really a comedian. You know, so I'm funny in Boston, but I want
to. Are you writing, you're compulsive writing the material?
Trying to.
Yeah.
So when I go across country, the other guy had the gift of gab too, another Irish, you know, and we went to Chicago with like the Zanies, and we came in, and the guy, one of the coverage heads, he goes, no, this is Don Gavin from Boston. Like, the guy was supposed to know what that meant.
Right.
And he goes, oh. So we went in, and he goes, well, that's good. I'm glad. And it's $11 or whatever it was.
Right.
And he goes, no, this is Don Gavin. And then we didn't end up not paying. So I meet the owner there, Jim, and he said, you know, I kept him saying, I want to go up on stage, and I pestered him, and he finally said, I wanted to just do 5-7 minutes. He says, give me a half an hour. Well, I had maybe a half an hour.
Right.
I went up, and luckily it went very well. I ended up staying at his house for about 3 or 4 days. He got me work around there.
Oh, yeah.
I went all the way out, cross country, stopped a couple other cities, did some comedy. Like, this guy was able to get me on to the stage.
This Martin Olson guy?
Yeah, so when I got to San Francisco, the comedy competition was a big thing in those days.
It was only
like the third year.
Oh, wow.
And they said, you came all the way from Boston for this? I go, I don't know what you're talking about this. You know, it was the night they were doing these auditions, but I have no idea that this even go on.
Oh, it was a fluke.
So I'm an outsider. They're handpicking, say, the 40, 38 of the 37 or the 40 people. Local guys that have been to San Francisco. I don't know anything about this.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm the only one that's picked that night, taken on.
Wow.
People said, you came all the way? And I'm going, I still don't know what you're talking about. All the way for what? I didn't even know there was a competition.
Oh, and then you're in it.
And then I found out Michael Pritchard was the guy out there, the one at the year I was in. And another Irishman, we befriended each other. And he let me stay at his house and also...
For those like 3 weeks of that fucking competition?
Yes,
where,
yes, yes.
You know, everyone's looking at those numbers. Yeah, like, what the fuck does that mean?
Yeah, yeah. And going, how are they, you know, the judges would be some guy, you know, once in a while you get someone that might be a columnist, but then you get a guy that owns the auto dealership.
Yeah,
and,
yeah,
you know,
it's crazy.
And
like,
and the guy, and one of the guys when I was out there that came next year, the one of the next year, you know, was driving. Slayton, Bobby Slayton, was driving the judges to the thing. I go, I think he's probably got an inside thing going here.
Slayton. Yeah, I drove him.
Yeah. What the hell?
I talked to him.
I live out there. These are friends of mine. What's it to you? You're from Boston. What the hell you know?
Slayton. Yeah, but it was crazy. I remember doing it twice, and you just, like, after every night, you're like, am I in? Am I still in?
Yes.
I mean, did I make the cut?
Yeah.
What are these numbers?
You had a way, too, they compiled it.
And that fucking didn't make sense.
And it really made no sense, because one night, when I made it to the final 10 or final 5, whatever it was, so one night, I come in 19th out of 20 people the week before, and then the very next night, I came in first. I'm going, I'm doing the same material, because I wasn't that much of a difference what I just did.
It's so much of a mind fuck. Who came in second that year? Someone famous?
Danny Johnson. I remember
Danny Johnson.
Who else was in that? Kevin Pollak came in the top 10.
He's the San Francisco guy, yeah.
Yeah, he was quite funny then.
He's funny, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I found his record on vinyl somewhere.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I told him about it. He doesn't want to hear about it. He's a very nice guy.
He is a sweetheart.
So, okay, so that was the big journey, 1981. You drive across country and you find out you're a comedian.
I came a comedian.
You had to be reaffirmed.
But I drove the entire way. Yeah. We finally get to the Golden Gate Bridge. Yeah. We get to there, and my buddy says, can you pull over? I thought he had to take a leak. He goes, I want to get behind the wheel, take this baby in. I said, what? You haven't driven 1 mile the whole fucking way, and you're going to take the baby in? I said, you ain't taking any baby in.
You
know?
You took it in.
Yeah, I took it in.
So now you know, and here's the weird thing, though. Like the big question about the sort of regional element, like there's only a couple, like Boston was a unique thing. It was its own comedy, you know, world.
Yes.
And it just feels to me like, even by the way you were talking about New York, that there was this idea, like even when I talked to Sweeney, you know, when he came out here and it was okay, yeah, but it didn't really pan out,
yeah,
or what anyone's going to expect. But you always had this buffer, you always had this cushion, because you guys could live up there and make a good living.
Sure.
Like when you went down to New York, it's there must have been a point where you're like, fuck this.
Well, eventually, when I was down there, it worked out. You know, I was working there quite a bit.
Sure, yeah.
But you couldn't really, you know, you'd have
to
move there.
Money.
You'd have to move there and, you know, get an apartment and all that.
And maybe make a living. See, that's the thing, you guys, and that's the difference between, you know, clearing the room on purpose and doing the job, is that in Boston, it's like you do the job.
Right.
Right. You don't.
And if not, you're not getting back there.
Right.
I mean, if you pull that shit like Kaufman, like lying on the ground, seeing how long before everybody would leave, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm going, what the fuck? You know, I went up and kicked him, you know, on from the side.
No,
you did. Yes, I did. I said, I'm going to get on tonight. I'm not putting up with this shit.
You went upstairs and kicked Andy Kaufman in the shoulder. Yeah, did he get up?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the difference between the, you know, this kind of a boundary pushing art guys and the guys who are like, let me get some laughs.
Yeah, I just came all the way from Boston to watch you sleep. Bite me.
You never liked him or got him?
Think of that. Just
that
take
moment.
That and multiply that by a few times. You probably wouldn't like him either.
Yeah, I get you.
And Larry David was another one. He would empty the room pretty intentionally.
And you saw that happen?
Yeah.
From
witness.
At Catch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mostly a Catch. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I worked all the comic strip and then, you know.
The old Improv?
Dangerfield, the Improv. Yeah, I did all those places too. But yeah. Catch was the spot.
I never got in there. I used to, like when I got to New York in 84 or whenever the fuck that was. When did I go? No. Doesn't matter. 92, 89. Yeah, I couldn't, like I worked the Boston Club for Barry and what was left of the old Improv. But Catch, I was always too proud, dude. I couldn't sit there and wait.
Really?
Yeah, because Lewis would be like, yeah, just wait around. We'll see what we can do. And I was like, I can't do it. I had friends who did it and it paid off.
Did you have a bit of a name by that point?
No. I mean, I hit the wall and bought in L.A. and bottomed out. And then I went back to Boston. I got a job at the Coffee Connection in Harvard Square.
Wow.
You know,
there's another thing you can fall back on.
Yeah, I can make an espresso.
You can?
Yeah, it was a pre-Starbucks espresso
place.
You get
that? You're a line cook?
Yeah,
you get it going.
88, yeah, I can do restaurant work. Yeah. I'd like to think I could. But no, I had no name. I didn't have a name until like 9 years ago. I was kind of like
a man with no name.
Yeah, man with no name. But eventually you got into New York and you did all the shows like we all did, right? The evening.
Yeah,
the
I did
Improv.
Probably 8-9 times.
Yeah,
I did traveling around. And when they started doing from city to city, I did it quite a bit. You know? And then those days,
comedy on the road.
No, the improvs around the country.
Yeah, they started popping up.
So you'd go and do this one here and this one here and this one here. And so, and pretty decent money.
Sure,
so,
man.
You know, there was a
So you were not, you didn't like, you. Unlike some guys, you definitely did the road. You went out and did it.
Eventually, but I had my own shows, I said, at Nick's for 9 years. And then after that, I started doing more of the travel. And in those days, there were good comedy clubs pretty much everywhere. Every city had, you know, whether it be Columbus, Ohio. Yeah.
Yeah.
Late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could go string of things, one after another, after another, after another.
Right, right.
Like Denver was a great scene.
Oh, yeah.
Comedy Works there was
great.
Fantastic.
Still great.
And,
still great.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
It's crazy.
And that's the one I particularly remember that was really good.
Really good.
And
the one down there.
A lot of stuff in Florida. A lot of stuff.
Yeah, I have a hard time in Florida.
Really?
Yeah. Wait, like you come West Palm, you did those rooms?
Yeah, I did. I bet there was 15 different clubs that you did down there.
It was great, huh? So you yeah, go down, again, you like go the, down there for like 3 weeks.
I like the warmer
for,
weather.
Yeah.
So
go down there for away. A few weeks.
Yeah, get away from the winter.
Yeah. Yeah. And you were always nice to us youngsters, you know?
Yes,
what I mean?
I was. Yes, yeah. I was.
Did you know that? I mean, was
yeah.
it something,
yeah,
a policy
funny.
You had?
There was a guy that called himself the godfather of Boston comedy. And I go, and after a few years, I told him to stop doing it. I said, I'm the godfather, and you are not, and stop doing it. And yeah. I did. Because I actually would help people with their act, even
yeah,
sit
yeah.
down.
Yeah.
I would. People would ask me to watch their act, and maybe, and I wouldn't give them a lot, but give them a note here.
Yeah.
Or say, well, you know, you might want to move this or say
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
And the less you tell someone, the better.
Yeah,
because they're
sure,
going to remember
sure.
two yeah. things. They're not going to remember 20.
Yeah.
So, and I did do time with that.
Yeah.
And I did a lot of the open mic stuff, and I was nice at the and that's, and I like the fact that people remember that.
Because, yeah, 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 yeah. Oh, yeah. We, I mean, I remember it. It was because you were that, because there was a bunch of the guys that were, you know, they're not that accessible, really.
Yes. Yeah, it's a good word.
You know, Sweeney's hit or miss. Right? With the, how are you? And Lenny, it's just scary.
Yeah, busy. Yeah, yeah. Busy. Well, I'm busy right now.
Yeah, Kenny, yeah, I don't know. And Dennis, no, I don't, not you know what
yeah.
I mean? And George was always nice.
George was nice, yeah.
And
yeah.
Mike McDonald, I was totally intimidating. That
really?
Guy. Like Mike McDonald, nice guy when yeah. you get to know him.
Right,
but,
right.
But you were always sort of like just, you know, you had a good vibe, you always killed, and you were helpful. You were helpful yeah. and supportive. That's a very nice thing.
Well, good to remember. Put
yeah,
that,
I mean,
put
like,
that on my tombstone.
Yeah, well, I remember, like, I think you actually had proteges, really. I mean, there were guys that modeled themselves after you.
Sure.
I would say Kevin Knox.
Well, the Kevin was, yeah, the guy that he was in comedy and doing okay, and then he quit. And he quit for years.
Kevin
five
Knox.
Or five or six years.
Knoxy.
Yeah, and we always remained friends. And I got him back in again.
Yeah.
And then he stayed in it from that point on. But a lot of the guys, yeah, like the Tom Carter and stuff, some people like
Carter,
that.
Tom Carter, yeah.
You know, I think my style...
Definitely.
A lot of people looked at
yeah.
different things for one. Wendy Liebman is another one.
Yes.
And, I mean, never my material. I'm not saying that they stole
right.
But certain just a style.
To throw the yeah. asides.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Throw it aside.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There was a lot of guys I remember. Like, I didn't... Fuck, I remember I started with... Who was around? Whatever happened to, like, Robbie Prince?
He does a lot of cruise ships, too.
He does? Yeah. So he's still in the
yeah.
game?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's still doing well.
And then Jim Loretta, he had a tragic end, right?
Yeah, he's still around.
He
but
is?
He had some problems.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, and Sizemore's gone, and Lazarus is gone, and I don't know.
Sizemore died on one of the ships. In
yeah. yeah, I know. We got a bug, huh?
Yeah, it was a, kind of an odd thing, very rare something.
Were you guys friends?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, yes.
He was a funny guy. He was around a long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Getting sick on a ship is not good. I get sick. I get food poisoning, but of course the ship's not going to admit that.
Right.
So I get airlifted off the ship. And I'm in Roatan, Honduras.
Oh, my
God. And
that's
the hospital I have to go to.
I get there.
Nobody in the hospital spoke English, except for the guy spackling the ceiling.
Yeah.
I'm serious. He became the interpreter to the doctor. So the guy comes in with, like, all these tools, like he's going to cut. They wanted to take out my gallbladder.
What?
And they wanted to take out my appendix, but it's already been taken out, so they were disappointed.
They just immediately wanted to take shit
they
out?
Wanted to, yeah, my spleen was the first thing they wanted. Then they wanted the gallbladder. I think they thought I still needed a heart. I think they were going to leave that in.
They really did.
But I'm so I didn't sign anything, and they told me you have to sign through the spackler. He says, "See, you know, right that you
yeah.
have to sign." I'm going, "No, I'm not signing shit." They can take into that, and they did. They did more. They were doing X-rays of my shoulder. And I said, "I've got food poisoning. You're in the wrong region."
Yeah, yeah. So what was it, just to get money from somebody?
Well, they finally had someone that had some insurance, I guess.
Oh.
And maybe they had guys that hadn't really done a lot of work and
like this practice.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. I like it was a living cadaver. That's what it was.
So when you go out, do you enjoy the water?
I enjoy the beach. Yeah, yeah. I love walking the beaches. And
but
stuff
like on that. The boats and stuff, what do you have?
Oh
you,
no, I yeah, yeah.
What do you do to occupy yourself? You go
I read prolifically. I read anything.
Yeah,
mostly menus. But I read a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've seen like 150 countries.
Yeah, when I get any, I love going to places I haven't been doing. Just going. Now, I never on a tour, you know, an organized tour. Just go off
just,
on your
yeah,
own.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I go to restaurants to that. Mostly, you know, people where they don't speak English.
Sure.
Okay. As long as it looks busy. I
yeah,
figure,
yeah.
And
looks busy. That's
and
important.
I look around. I said, you know, I'll have that. Whatever, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I've found great restaurants that way.
That's the best way. Just yeah. That's busy and point at things.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I got two very long index fingers. So.
Have you done the Scandinavian, the Arctic tours
sure,
as well?
Sure, sure.
Are yeah. those great? Have
fantastic.
You pretty?
Fantastic. Yeah. And even Iceland. Two years ago, I did 2 months in Australia and New Zealand.
Oh.
I was just stayed there. And I did, you know, I'd do a ship and go back to a hotel. And the next night, I'd do a ship. then I'd have 2 days off, then I'd do a ship. So I really got to get a feel of Melbourne. Melbourne's my favorite city.
Great city. Yeah. It's like Boston, kind of, a little bit.
I think so.
A little bit.
Except even more green, a lot of great parks.
Yeah.
I liked it much better than Sydney. And New Zealand, I liked all of it. It was just gorgeous.
New Zealand's great. I've never been
You mentioned Ireland. You should get to New Zealand. Just
pretty.
Terrific. Oh, and then I did really and Bora Bora, Skimmy Rotunga, and all.
You're doing gigs there or just all?
No, working on ship.
Oh, yeah. So you get off and look around.
Yeah, all those places, yeah.
And what's the next one you got?
Now I'm doing just a lot. It's kind of limited to the Caribbean, but I got one going to Hawaii. Alaska I love doing too.
Alaska's nice. One of my favorites. Yeah. So then what do? You fly?
Fly to Vancouver usually, Seattle, and then go up from there.
Well, it sounds good, man.
Yeah, still enjoying it. That's it.
And you've got kids, right?
My kids are in their 40s now.
Oh, wow.
And I have a 7-year-old. Maddox is my grandson, who I'll be seeing tomorrow, as a matter of fact.
He's out here?
He lives in San Rafael, yeah. So.
Oh, so you're going up north
a
little bit?
Yeah, I'm going over there for 5 or 6 days. I'm looking forward to seeing him.
What all your kids do? Any of them in show business?
Not at all. One's an environmental scientist. Oh. My daughter she works with the educational stuff out in San Rafael. And then my son is a caterer. And now that the my son is funny, but he's not not a stand-up.
And everybody's doing good.
Everybody's going, as far as I know, I've been away for a week. So.
Yeah. Well, Don, it's great to see you.
It's a thrill. And we almost got together a few times with this,
except
the venue didn't work. But this time it did.
It all worked out. I'm so glad you're here, man. Jim Serpico worked it out for us.
Yes, he did.
He's taking, and the record that you just reissued, when was it recorded?
We recorded it in, I think, 2011. But what happened when I did it at the Comedy Connection that was up in Portland? And it's, we remastered it now, and so it's a lot cleaner and put together. But I never even thought of really producing it, I ran off a couple of thousand copies, and I'd sell them basically out of the back of my car.
Or after a show.
But I never, I'm the worst businessman in the world.
Well, we all
are. Jim Serpico is helping me out now.
Yeah.
And hopefully maybe a few more people will know about it.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Nice talking to you. Thanks for coming.
All right, this is a joy. Thank you so much.
All right. All right, that was Don Gavin. Fucking Don Gavin. He's the guy, man. He had a lot of impact on a lot of people. It's great talking to him. His album, Live with a Manhattan, is available in a lot of different places, streaming. Go look for that. End Times Fun. Quarantine people. People who are about to be quarantined. People who are living in the times we live in, which seem dire and scary, it's time for a very special, deep type of relief with Mark Maron's latest stand-up special. I'm third-personing it. End Times Fun is on Netflix now. Now. Right now it is. And now I will play guitar. Boomer lives.